You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello and happy 2024. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and this is Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I am so excited to start a whole new year with you. You know, 2023 brought so much. It was definitely, you know, we can hold two truths at once for 2023. I think a lot of beautiful things happened in 2023 and a lot of really horrifying, terrifying, not wonderful things happened in 2023. And together, let's hold them both true. Let's move on aware of how it affected us, both the positive and the negative, and how we're going to keep creative and stay focused and create theater and television and film together. Some of the things, you know, I put this on my social media, but when I was trying to do like my photo dump of like 2023, I got overwhelmed in a really good way because I didn't know. There were so many options to post, and I was like, well, I feel like that's a good year spent, you know. There's so many personal things, like making so much moves on me and my husband and our puppy's house. We spent the last day of 2023 painting the living room. We have the bedroom pretty much done, the bathroom is done, and now we're finishing up the living room. It's like, that seemed so far away when we bought this house because it was in such a state. But that was, you know, such a way to spend the last day of 2023. And, you know, so many professional positives happened. Like, my book came out in 2023 and I started, you know, expanding my audience to colleges and groups, and it's just been, you know, incredible, and I want to carry that into 2024, that momentum, that energy, and I hope that you have been inspired by this podcast. One thing that you've listened to, I would love it if you listen to every episode. Are you kidding me? Please. But, you know, if one episode you listened to in 2023 inspired you to do something, make a change, a positive change in your life, send that email, start writing that script, start raising that money, you know, then the podcast did its job, and it's going to keep continuing to do its job. But, you know, at the end of 2023, everything got really, really hectic, and I sort of fell back on my biweekly release schedule, but I'm committing to that again. You're going to get two episodes a month. And the conversations are also going to be a lot more streamlined, a lot more specific. And I also want to hear from you. If there's anything you want me to talk about on the podcast, reach out. You know, email me at dearmultihyphenate@gmail.com. If you want to hear me talk about finances, if you want to hear me talk about specifically photography, if you want to hear me talk about, you know, boundaries, like a specific topic, then yeah, I would love to hear from you. That's, you know, I want to give the people what they want, you know. That's what 2024 is about. Also, you know, please follow on social media at Dear Multi-Hyphenate or at The Michael Kushner, and say hey, and also rate, review, comment, subscribe, you know. Apple Podcasts is a great place for that, and they really do matter. Those reviews really do matter, so please do that. And download the episode. Download the episode. That also helps. Hey, I'm just telling you the truths about podcasting, right? Just like with anything in the entertainment industry, numbers are important. It's a really easy way for me to keep doing this, and I don't ask for any Patreon or OnlyFans money, whatever everyone's doing. I want to give you all the free content. That's one of my pledges to accessibility in the industry. But in order for me to keep doing that, please download episodes, subscribe, rate, follow on social media, all that good stuff. And I'm going to keep that up. But anyway, you know, if you're listening to this, I would love to work with you as well. Come to Michael Kushner Photography. I do one-on-one career sessions through Dear Multi Hyphenate. And, you know, let's just be friends. Like, you know, how fun is that? That's what's great about art these days. But anyway, let's, you know, let's get on to the episode. Like, I hope this is going to inspire you to set intentions and set career goals and just be the artist you want to be. But this episode is really great. I love Jordan's energy and honesty, and that's something I also really want to bring into 2024. Not that I wasn't honest with you all before, but more of a brute honesty, more of a, you know, this is how it is, this is what's happening, this is why it's good or bad or in the middle or whatever. But I think this episode is a really, really good start. We talk about, you know, everything from ageism in the industry to allowing yourself to be a theater nerd to checking off boxes and maintaining family expectations and also just humping dogs. You'll just listen to the episode. You'll understand pretty quickly. But let's get into the episode. Jordan Kai Burnett just finished the sold-out run in the world premiere production of Gene and Gilda playing their comedy idol, Gilda Radner. They just returned from their Las Vegas debut starring as the MC for Channing Tatum's Magic Mike Live, which played at both the Hard Rock and legendary Sahara Hotel and Casino. They were featured in the same role for Finding Magic Mike on HBO Max. Favorite credits include Romeo and Michelle, the musical where they played Heather Mooney at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle and received a Gregory Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress in a Musical. They've also done Found, Scissorhands, which they are currently in Los Angeles, and they were lucky enough to work side-by-side with Patton Benatar and Neil Giraldo on the Romeo and Juliet project as Benvolia, which I'm obsessed with. Co-creator of Daisy and Jordan's Sunday Brunch of Shame with comedy partner Tony Award winner Daisy Egan, and they are a graduate of Emerson College and a student of both the Groundlings and the Upright Citizens Brigade. You can follow Jordan at JKAIB, and you could also visit JKAIB.com for more information. Please go see them if you're in the Los Angeles area. Go see them starring in Scissorhands the Musical. It's, you know, I'm not able to see it since I won't be in LA, but everything I've watched and listened to and learned about the production sounds absolutely incredible, and I really, really would love to see it. But if you're in the LA area, go see it. Go support Scissorhands the Musical. Information on how to get tickets is in the episode, and we also talk about what it's like being in the show. It's a pretty great episode. Again, subscribe, download, comment, share with your friends, your family. And again, Happy New Year. Enjoy. Hi, Jordan Kai Burnett. It's so good to have you.
Oh, it's so good to be had.
You're not the first Burnett I've had on my podcast. I've had Carol Burnett.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. Which I always tell people that she's my cousin. I always tell people she's my cousin because I'm a liar, but I'm also a funny liar. So I feel like by telling people that she's my cousin, I'm sort of just like manifesting into truth.
Well, you never know with 23andMe. It's like it's actually, that's kind of funny because I do Ancestry. I have it on my app, and I find it to be really interesting because I get messages, your dog is fully humping the bed, and I really love it.
I literally pushed his bed so far out of the room, and he said, no, I will be an OnlyFans. I will be in Only Dogs, and I will be on the internet.
Literally, woof! That's hysterical. For those of you that are just listening to the podcast, when the full video is uploaded to YouTube, I just want you to, you know, skip ahead to, you know, 3 minutes and 28 seconds. I guess I don't know what the exact time.
My gorgeous 14-year-old baby dog, a baby of 14, bringing the bed. Like, is bringing the bed even closer into the frame? I could not have planned this. Ernest James.
That's
I'm on TV.
You know, when it's the first and middle name, it's important. I'm actually thoroughly obsessed with this. This is it all ties into multi-hyphenating because sometimes, you know, you just gotta pump it out, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, we've all done it. It's just like, boo, I'm on TV right now. Can you be cool?
Especially working from home. It's pretty, you know, just got to do what you got to do. But, yes. You know, it's so funny because I have ancestry on my... It's just amazing. I have ancestry on my phone and I occasionally get a message that is like, hey, you know, we're, I think, out, like, my great-grandma was your great-grandma's third cousin. And it's like, that's amazing.
Really?
The crazy cool thing was I went to Frenchwoods for sleepaway camp.
I went to Stage Door Manor, so.
Okay. This is for everyone.
For anyone who doesn't know, the rivalry is real.
Okay. You just
is that not what you were going to say?
You just proved my point. For Stage Door, there's a rivalry. But for Frenchwoods kids, we support you.
You're such a liar. You're a liar because everybody that I know that went to French Woods is always like, well, you went to Stage Door. And I'm like, well, you're not saying that there's a rivalry, but your attitude, at least I went to Stage Door Manor, so I know how to be honest. I can be honest and truthful in my experience. Oh, I can be dropped in. I can be dropped in. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, no, I love French Woods and I love Stage Door kids.
Me too. Some
of my best friends are from Stage Door. You know, I went to French Woods and all of a sudden I got a notification on my ancestry that I am potentially third or fourth cousins with the owner's wife's daughter.
You're French Woods legacy, basically.
You know what? I think they're going to name a theater after me now.
That's the dream. The dream is that I get famous enough that when they have to build a new theater at Stage Door, they're like, what if we call this the Burnett Pool Theater or whatever it is? Because, you know, they like turned the indoor pool at Stage Door into like the coolest theater. They turned the barn that burned down into another theater. So like, I just want there to be, actually it would have to be like a black box for musicals. It would have to be like an indie rock theater where they only do rock musicals. And they call it the Jordan Kyburnett Theater. And all of the cool kids really want to be in that show.
I understand that. There was like, you know, all the small cast shows. We were like, yeah. Oh, I hope I can. I wanted to be in the big. It was so funny. I actually wound up getting cast in all of the small cast shows.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to be in the big ones because I'm a big, like, I'm a large musical person. Like, Les Mis, The Producers. Like, those are my favorite shows. But I was, you know, cast in Spelling Bee. I was cast in. I was in Doubt. I played Father Flynn in Doubt at the ripe old age of 17. Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm so obsessed. I love when they made the movie Camp about Stage Door.
Yeah.
And one of the things was that, like, they were doing Company.
Mm-hmm.
There had always been this rule when I was there that, like, they would never do Company in Follies. And then they did it in the movie. And then they definitely did it at Stage Door.
Of course.
But sometimes I think about, like, 16-year, like, truly, truly. And this is just because he was a friend of mine at camp. But I think about, like, 14-year-old Skylar Astin playing the Baron in Grand Hotel.
Yep.
What are you talking? And it was a flawless performance. But like, what are you talking about?
I have a question for you with that. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I do mind.
Strike that, reverse it.
Please. I only mind. You know what? I don't mind.
Yeah.
Here's the truth. I'm gonna say this. I don't mind. I love who I am right now. I am the best version of myself. I am like the hottest, the most fun, the best at eating snacks. I'm the best version of myself. But for whatever reason, when people see me, they think I'm younger than I am. And well, that's because I have good skin, but they think I'm younger than I am. And then when they find out how old I am, in this business, there is this thing that's like, oh, you're that age, but you've only done this. And there's this like stigma about being a certain age. So I don't care how old I am, I would tell you over drinks. But I think there's something about presenting the way that I present and being a certain age where there's like this like, has time run out? Like old dudes in the studios are like, well, time's run out. And I'm like, no, time hasn't run out. I'm actually just walking into my power right now. But like, okay, cool guys, whatever you think. So that's how I feel about age. Like I would tell you, but it feels like it's been put into a place where like if I told you, then it's gonna become a thing. And like I'm 16, I'm
It will,
21, I'm
right.
25
I'm
in my brain.
94. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like in my brain, I can rent. I just was able to rent a car.
Yes. Well, all of a sudden, they're expecting me to pay taxes. And I'm like,
It's so gross.
that's wild. And
Can you stop doing that?
it's been a while since I've been expected to pay taxes. And it's still like a, oh, wow. Okay. You know, it's so funny that
Yeah,
like,
it never gets it. Ne He's. I'm moving the, for all of you who are not watching. I am moving my body to cover my dog's humping behavior, and he keeps scooching out from behind me so you can show you all. This.
It's actually impressive. Like
It's
now
unbe it's unbelievable.
it was funny and now it's impressive.
And now it's impressive. Wait, let me just stop
That
it.
it's so funny because when I said at the beginning, I was like, no, leave your dog in there. Like they can't be humping that much.
He's never, he has not humped this much since he was a baby. What is it about today, bro?
It's also the face that it's getting that's
I
killing me.
know.
It's like it's just like
ASPCA is going to come for me. Yes.
so no, age is so interesting because it definitely informs how people think of the other. And the
Right.
only reason why I was asking that was really because I feel very passionately about Gen Z in many different ways. I feel sometimes they're going to save the world and then other times destroy the world.
Yeah.
But just as I felt that way about millennials, and
Yeah.
just as the way that I feel about boomers, right? How they
Yeah,
left
yeah, yeah.
the world to us. So it's not
Yeah.
a Gen Z specific thing. It is
Right.
just, it's for every generation. So, you know, I really do like, it's so interesting. When I was younger, this is the sort of company follies talk at these camps, right?
Yes.
When I was younger, when I was 13 years old, I did not at Frenchwoods, but in my local theater growing
Yes.
up, I did Rocky Horror. I did Scarlet
Yeah.
Pimpernel. I did
Yeah.
Dark of the Moon. At
Great.
13 years old, I played Conjure Man, a 300-year-old witch,
Yes.
and 13 years old. And I think that it was probably one of the best things to ever happen because we took it so, like, we were in drag at 13 years
So
old and took
seriously.
it so seriously with so much respect.
100%.
And there's this place now where I feel like adults feel like they can only do Honk Junior or
That's right.
a show
Yeah.
like that. And I'm like, I understand why, but I also feel like I'm like, Gen Z is like, kids are smarter
Oh
than
my
what.
gosh, they have access to everything.
And they're also, when handled with something that needs to be handled with care, they will do it. They just have to feel important enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, yeah, every school is doing Mean Girls. That's cool. But I'm like, why aren't you doing Jekyll and Hyde? Why aren't you doing something
Well,
dark?
yeah, also like you're talking to like a full-time creep. Like I would like when I was like 4 years old, I went to see Les Mis and I sat through it like this. This
Les
is
Mis
the story I've
tattoo.
been. Thank you. What does it say?
Le Grand Jeu, it's my Les Mis tattoo. It's one
Oh,
day
I
more in
love that.
French in Victor Hugo's handwriting, but he never wrote the phrase, so I found his manuscripts and I pieced together his letters to form it. And I got it on June 5th, which is the day of the June Rebellion.
Oh,
Gay.
we are living for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Les Mis is on my list of shows that I haven't done yet, but I swear I will.
Okay, can we be the Thénardiers?
Yeah. I was like an Eponine for so long,
Yeah.
and now I feel like I have like a few years of Fantine left, and then we're gonna Thénardier.
I love it. I would have you do Thénardier and I'll be Madame Thénardier.
Well, actually, what I would really like is to play Javert. Like that's.
Fierce.
When I was like 11, I did stars in my voice
Multitudes.
lessons. In my voice
Got
lessons.
it. You gotta whip out the old stars.
It actually makes a lot of sense now in my life. Like when I look back at it, I'm like, oh no, that tracks. That actually
Yes.
really checks out. Because I also like to walk around and sing Hunt for This Man.
Home, the
Like
city, every street,
every
every
street, every
grade.
gate. Oh, I will. I'm walking through the Target on La Brea doing the soprano line of Madame Guillotine an octave down so that I can sing it to myself.
Are we the same person?
We might be. The thing is, like, I love musicals. Okay? I love them.
Me
I'm
too.
a cool guy with nose piercings and like cool guy stuff, and on the inside, I am a nerd. And I love them. I love lots of them. I love all different ones of them. And the ones that like would dare to be scary when I was a teenager, let's go. There was just something about like being a creepy emo kid and the crossover of like that and all of the facade reprises.
All of them.
Every single one of them. Emily Skinner singing for her life from the ensemble. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Did you watch the David Hasselhoff Jekyll DVD VHS?
I saw it live.
So I just had in my studio Colleen Sexton.
Colleen Sexton. I knew you were going to say that because I'm obsessed with her. That voice.
They don't make them like that anymore.
I'm not sure they ever made them like that. I think they made one like that, and it was Colleen Sexton.
And you know she was 20 when they filmed that?
Yeah, no, that tracks for me, though. That tracks right. for me. Like...
She's amazing. Her energy is incredible. And those are the people, you know, those are the sort of experiences that like being a multi-hyphenate, which we'll eventually get into because I feel like we can talk about everything, that I'm so grateful for being a multi-hyphenate and creating my own work and creating my own spaces, because like I, of course, when I photographed Julie Andrews, it was one of the best days of my life. And how can it not be, right? Mm. I've Mary Poppins on my arm. But I get equally as giddy when I have people like Colleen Sexton in the studio who represents a certain part of my life and represents a certain part of the industry that means so much and has inspired. Like it's so funny you said that about Emily Skinner. It's like I had people come into the studio and we're talking about things and I'll say, who did that on the cast album? Like, who was that? And they'll go, me. That was my line. And I'm like, and I freak out, right? Because I'm like, I love that. I love that shit so much. So
yeah,
I am
too.
in complete agreement with you about being like total nerds about
I love
do.
It. I love it. I find myself talking to friends a lot and they'll be like, wow, you're still so into this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm still so into it.
So like who cares?
Like I'm so into it. And it's sort of delightful to be someone who's like, a lot of my friends are not in the business anymore just because like they wanted to, you know, like be able to pay their bills and be like reasonable humans.
Right.
And I can't, I used to pretend, this is a perfect example, that I was Eponine, not singing on my own, dying against my couch. The couch was Marius, and I would do a little Fall of Rain, like 4 years old, dying. And that is who I am at my core.
Yeah. I agree. We're just, and it's okay to be, it's okay. This is also
it's
what
okay
I want.
To love it. It's okay to love it. We're allowed to enjoy it. It is something so beautiful and delightful, and we get to get I get paid to like get dressed up for a living. Oh my gosh, this is, if 5-year-old Jordan could see now Jordan, they would be like, that's my hero. And I'm not like a star, I'm just a guy that works.
Yeah.
And I love it, and I love to go to the theater, and every time I go to the theater I want to love it, especially after the pandemic. I just want to love everything, even if I don't. I'm like, I really tried.
It's so funny you said that. My client just before the episode, we were having that exact conversation. I want to love everything.
Everything.
And it hurts when I don't, because I'm like, this could have been so good.
You betrayed me.
You betrayed me.
You betrayed me. Yeah. And it feels like very much like we're still doing this. So like if we're going into it, and look, maybe I do sound like a Pollyanna, but like whatever. I actually am cool. I feel cool enough in my body to be like, actually, I'm cool enough to tell you that it's cool to like stuff.
Why? When did it become not cool to like something? To be especially,
I don't know.
Like, I think there's a, you know, like the metaphor of the duck, you know, like how when you do something, it needs to have the ease of a duck on a pond, but underneath they're going like this.
Oh, sure.
So I feel like that's how it is with theater people. We have to walk, we have to walk into spaces and be cool as a cucumber, but the energy below has to be paddle, 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 paddle to get us from one point to another. But I think that's also about love and passion and nerddom. Like it's,
Absolutely.
I
We
wear it on
love
my
what we
sleeve.
love. Yeah. Like I'm in LA right now, and my friend from Stage Door Manor, who was my roommate when we were children, is in the tour of Mamma Mia right now. And I went and I had the time of my life. Because I know people want to say whatever about Mom, like theater people want to say whatever about Mamma Mia. I went in and for 2.5 hours, I forgot I had anything on my plate. And I'm sorry, but The Winner Takes It All is a bop. That sounds like a musical theater song. It sounds like it was written for a musical. I know it wasn't. I'm just saying it sounds like it was. I'll nerd out about this stuff all day long.
Me too. So, you're on your multi-hyphenate. So,
Yes.
Jordan, what to you is a multi-hyphenate?
I think the medium-sized answer is that for a long time in For a long time, there was this idea that you had to really focus on one thing, that there was only space for one thing. I went to musical theater school. I went to Stage Door Manor. I did all these things that were priming me for this one thing, and that there was no room around it. And if you really wanted to be in musical theater, that you had to be this cutthroat, da, da, da. And don't get me wrong, there's truth to that. But I think something that I really pride myself on is like, while there are definitely boxes that I'd like to check that I haven't checked yet, I have spent the last X amount of years paying my bills, traveling around the country and sometimes the world, doing what I love, which includes musicals, which includes comedy, which includes plays, which includes hosting, which it has been this ex really expansive experience that I always thought, because I was like 16 bars in a jewel tone dress. Like I was, when I got to school, when I went to Emerson College, and the first day I was the person that was like, what's your 16 bars? Like I was the worst. I love that person. They are part of me. But I was the ick. And bless my friends who've like stuck by me since then and have been like, oh, I'm so glad you calmed down. But I think that person never could have imagined being all of these things because I was really so focused. There's only one thing you can do. And now I've had this great joy of doing like all these different things in my life, and paying my bills doing it, which is the dream. And I've carved this little thing, this little like serpentine career for myself, playing all these weird parts and hosting and emceeing a gigantic show, a multi-zillion dollar show in Vegas, and doing plays about like one of my comedy heroes. Like I've done all of these things that felt like, if I had just focused on this one thing, I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to experience the life that I've had, which has been pretty sick.
I think it's really interesting that many people don't think that the theater, even standing by itself, the theater, not even adding television and film, is a lucrative industry if you don't make it on Broadway. Or for many people, I think, if you're not on Broadway, then you're not a success. And those are the people at home, where you grew up, being like, are you on Broadway yet? Oh, no, well, maybe one day. But it is possible to have success in your industry in so many different ways. You've always wanted to do a Disney cruise. Go get that Disney
Go
cruise.
get that cruise.
You want to tour the country because you've never been outside of your state. Book that national tour
Yeah.
so that you can go see the world, even if you are going city to city to city every night.
Yeah.
The next contract, maybe you get, you'll say, all right, I did that contract. Now I'm going to do this contract. You want to inspire young kids, young people. Go do that theater for young audiences show. Like, check off those boxes, have that experience, and be smart about it, right? Like, do that national tour, save up that money. Some of those experiences, you can save up enough money to put a down payment on an apartment in New York City,
That's
and
real.
it's not lucrative. It's like you can have a family and a dog and a house by just working in the theater. If if you are strategic and you are aware of what you want. And I think what you're saying is so important about like the growth that you went on is like, yes, you were a certain person once before, but you went on this journey. And when did you start to maybe open yourself up? Like when you started to go tour the world, go tour the US, tour the world, and start to play your favorite comedian and start to host, what did you notice in your life that started to change that helped you experience those things?
Well, I think like right out of college, I had always thought I'm gonna be in New York forever. But I ended up moving to LA because I'd never been, well, two reasons. My boyfriend at the time really wanted to go. And I'd never been far enough away from my mother that she couldn't drive to me in a day. And it felt like it was time. And I wanted to do comedy. And I thought, oh, I'll just give this a try. And excuse me. It had been a really interesting time because I had been in final callbacks for, like at that time it was like Jersey Boys and Fiddler and all of these things I went to the end for, and I didn't book them, and I moved on and I went to LA, but it was like there was this ball rolling in New York and I picked up and I went to LA, which was like a really weird choice, if I'm being honest. When I think back on it, it feels like it was a really weird choice, but it ended up, excuse me. Everyone has this cough right now, right? It ended up, I think that was sort of when I started to realize that there was other stuff. I got into puppetry. That's when I got into puppetry, is when I moved to Los Angeles. And I studied with Michael Early, who was Snuffleupagus on Sesame Street. And Michael Earl, sorry, excuse me, Michael Earl, please. And then like I started doing stand-up, and then I said so, and then I started doing theater in LA, which was weird. And all of these things started happening, but I was finding myself being like, oh, I haven't stopped paying my bills, doing all of these things in X amount of years. So it just sort of rolled into it. And then I was doing the show I'm doing right now, Scissorhands, in 2018. And there's a show in Vegas called Magic Mike Live that when my best friend, Nikki Claspel, who's currently on the Moulin Rouge tour, shout out to Baby Cat, saw that show, immediately called me and was like, it's you. And I was like, okay, I don't get it. We had seen the Magic Mike movie Double XL, and I had been like, I want to play Jada. Can I be the host of a male strip show? This was in 2015. So cut to 2018. I find out that the person who's in the show is leaving. I've never seen the show, but I'm going off of the trust of my best friend. I fly myself to Los Angeles for a night to audition. And 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I'm moving to Vegas. Like it happened like that. And then all of a sudden, and it was hard to explain to people. Like, I love my mother, but at first she was like, I don't understand. It's not Broadway. And I was like, right, but it is the same amount of money as Broadway. Of course, it's not Broadway. First of all, it's in Las Vegas. Second of all, yeah, it's not me doing Les Mis. I understand that these things are different, mom, but like, and I love my mother. She's great. She's very supportive. Thanks, Iris. We love you. But it took some explaining. To be like, no, this is like, I know that to you don't understand what this is yet, but when you see this multi-zillion dollar show and you see that the level of production and you see the fact that I'm playing to 500 people every night, that like it, yeah, it's not Broadway. It's not in New York. It's not Broadway. That's where Broadway is. It's this extraordinary, silly ass thing that I get to do every night where I get to make people feel really sexy and crack jokes about my body part.
Which we love
Which
and
we live for.
which we live for. And I think also we can't forget like what when we're talking about checking off those boxes, some of those boxes, one of them is Broadway.
Yes, one of them is, and please don't get me wrong, to anyone that is listening, I am ready to make my Broadway debut.
Same,
The
same.
timing is right. I feel very good about it. I feel like I've put the time in and now I'm ready. I have been working. Like, I feel like seasoned and ready to go do this one thing. So if you're listening, please know I'm ready. That being said, I also love to work. I love to go wherever I can to work. I love to be creating new stuff at any moment. I've been a part of a bunch of shows that have started in a room and have snowballed into what will someday be a thing. But that to me is is so gratifying to be like, oh, I'm the first person that ever sang this song. Wow. It's great.
Broadway is not the only box.
It's not the only box. And I love Broadway. And I want to be clear that like I have a lot of friends who've worked on Broadway. So for them, it's not like, for them, it's their summer job. And I'm like, I love that for you. I still, 5-year-old Jordan still wants to do 8 shows a week for a little while in New York City. And like, I want that, but it's not the only thing I want.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Family is really interesting. It's, I've had a lot of things, and I'm very close with my grandma. She's 92 years old.
Oh, we
and I
love her.
And I, Doris, yes, we love. And I know, she of course means everything with the best. Never, ever, ever would she mean this with any animosity or hate in her art, in her heart. But I wrote a book. I teach at NYU. I have photographed Julie Andrews and Patty and all of these people. I will still get the, but I still want to see you on Broadway. And
oh yeah.
And it doesn't, it's meant with all the love, but yeah. I think generationally it's really interesting. We are doing multiple things and living multiple truths. When that generation and the generations that sort of came before us were only used to living one truth. And for many people, people don't understand living as a multi-hyphenate because it's like, well, how do you maintain all of that? And like, how do you do this? How do you do that? I'm like, you figure it out.
You make it work.
You make it work. And you also establish boundaries into it that you say, I'm not working at that time. I'm not working on that day.
Which I've been terrible about for so much of my life. And it took the pandemic basically for me to go, yeah, actually I do need 4 days off.
Yeah.
I do need 2 days off. And I think also like again, meaning completely well, and not, I had a friend that was on Law and Order and my mom saw it and was like, so how did they get on Law and Order? Yeah. And I'm like, they booked it. They booked Law and Order. That's what they did. That has nothing to do with me. Like, that's the thing I'm always reminding people. Like, if I'm ever like talking to people young in the business, I'm like, just remember that actually booking it has nothing to do with you. It has absolutely nothing to do with you. Go into the room and kill it. Do the best work that you have ever done every time. Just kill it. Just have a great time doing exactly what you love, because booking it has nothing to do with you. And I I was up for this thing last week that like, oof, it hurt when I didn't get it. It hurt. Yeah. But I know that the right people watched my tape and that I was great and that the booking it had nothing to do with me. It's like, what can I do? I can't change your past. I can't change your experiences. This is what I'm doing. This is it.
Well, they always say, you're never auditioning for the actual project. You're auditioning for the next one.
Right.
They always say, if you want to book a project, book a vacation.
Right.
Book the
room.
Well, what's so funny is, you know, my husband and I, we just filmed a major motion picture together. We were cast together for these two roles, which was
That's
really,
very great.
which was really cool because our managers, we have the same managers, submitted us together and
Love.
we did the self-tape together and they were like, okay, like
Right.
you
The
got it.
dream.
But it's so funny because we had full plans. Everything was already mapped out. We paid for the flights. We had the camping. We were going to see Joni Mitchell's concert in Washington State.
Oof.
And we had to forfeit the tickets and sell them on SeatGeek or whatever it was. We were camping in the gorge in Washington State and we were flying. Everything was, we had the puppy sitter. I mean, it was like, it was next week. And,
Always.
yeah. And, but it's so funny because when you book things, it also has this sense of like, wow, that was easy. You know,
Oh.
it kind of obliterates all of the other auditions that you've done where like, oh, there's so much work in this. And then when you finally book something,
When
it's
you book
like,
that one,
great.
it feels, oh, I had a friend that won $10,000 on a scratcher once.
Amazing.
And it's like that. It's like he won $10,000 on a scratcher. And so then every time he plays a scratcher, he thinks he's gonna win $10,000 again.
Ooh.
And I think that that's the thing is like every time I book something, I'm like, oh God, so good at my job. And I forget that I'm scratching and scratching and scratching and scratching.
That's
My gosh.
amazing.
Was this my
That's,
TED Talk? I don't
I think that is your TED Talk.
My
But
TED Talk.
the cool thing about multi-hyphenating is that we actually
Please.
prevent a lot of the maybes and what ifs and putting our success in other people's hands. We as multi-hyphenates create our experiences. We create that. So it's, you know, that's why my idol is Mel Brooks because he wrote the things that he produced and starred in, and he therefore created jobs for other people
For his
as well.
friends.
Multi-hyphenating is a lucrative experience. It's good for the economy because it creates jobs. And I think, you know, when people look at the sort of multi-hyphenate and go, oh, I could never do that. Well, you haven't even tried.
It's an interesting thing. I think again, the stigma is like when you ask me how old I am, it's like who when you ask me what I do, like what's the room? Am I an actor? Am I a singer? Am I a comedian? Am I a host? Am I, you want to know about my rock band? Like, do you want to know that I'm really into donuts? Do you want to know about my queerness? Like, these are all the things that add up to make a this. And depending on the room, I feel like you have to like highlight one of them depending on the room. But the truth is, they're all part of it.
Speaking of queerness, you know, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and you were talking about your relationship with gender. And I think that there is a direct correlation to gender and multi-hyphenating, because you said, you know, the way in which you identify, it's a way for you to, and I don't mean to misquote you, and please feel free to correct me, it's a way for you to experience all of the things. And multi-hyphenating is that as well. It is the I get to experience different people and different worlds and different art forms. Don't
It's so
know.
interesting when you say it like that. Yeah, like I guess w when
Yeah.
so I think like when I started to have words for my experience, that's the only way I can say it, is like it started to make so much sense, like because I don't I my pronouns are they and she, and that's because it gender to me feels like an expansive experience. It feels like multitudes, you know, it doesn't feel like one thing or not one thing. It feels like a bunch of things. It feels like I'm encapsulating all these different things. And when I had language for it just clicked, and I was like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This explains so much of my anxiety for my whole life and why I didn't feel like the thing that I didn't feel like. And it's true, it is sort of like what would happen if I just like got on board with everything that I'm doing rather than feeling like I had to choose one in my career and also in my identity.
That's all I'm saying is it, you know, it's we don't have to choose. We live in a very binary society, you know, it's, and I say this in the beginning of my book, it's like, we have been conditioned and trained to wake up at 7 a.m, go to Dunkin' Donuts, pick up your order, clock in at 9, leave at 5, do this, cook dinner, watch a program, go to bed.
Yeah.
But what if we can have different experiences? What if we can make money in other ways and open up our experiences without crossing boundaries with ourselves? Because the pandemic, you know, was really interesting for me. I'm a COVID long hauler, and while COVID almost fucking killed me, you know, it also issued this vitality in me. And I was able to go, I can live better if I establish boundaries.
Yeah.
And my life has been so much, I feel like, more colorful, knock on wood, you know, because I've been able to say, hey, yes, but not for that amount of money. Not at this time. That doesn't seem incredibly safe to me. Let's fix all of these things. Or, hey, I'm not interested in that. Multi-hyphenating is a way for a better life. It's a more expansive life.
And I wonder, like, I feel like I have a lot of friends who have had the experience post-COVID, as if we're not still currently in COVID, but let's say post-initial COVID. Post-COVID season 1 and 2, that like boundary setting and worth is different. Like my friends are asking for money for their work in a way that they absolutely never did before. And I think that's just one example of that. But like, yeah, I mean, there's like no benefits to living through a horrible pandemic except for the way that you proceed, you know? Like the only thing you can control is like how you proceed.
Do you feel like you learned any really specific lessons during COVID that completely changed who you are as an artist?
Oh man, like probably so many. But I think like probably the, I think, yes. I think the biggest thing I learned is that I love the show, but the show doesn't love me back.
Oh.
Which is a hard thing to hear, but I love what I do. I love it. I will take on way more than I should have to try and keep a show afloat, for example, or a show in good standing. But when it comes down to it, like the show is the show and it doesn't love you back. So if you get sick, for example, and you can't do the show's not going to come over and tuck you in at night and tell you that you're like, the show is going to want you to be sick at the show and do the show. And that's, I think, what a lot of people experienced. So I think, you know, when it's time for them to move on, they're going to recast someone, whatever it is. I didn't have that experience, but a lot of my friends did. And I think like the boundaries, like I love what I do, but the boundaries that I'm still learning to set in terms of like, this is what I do and I love it. It's not who I am. I have to be able to exist in a world where when I go to a party, we don't just talk about work. I want to know about who you're fucking. I want to know about what you're eating. And I want to know about how many dogs you have at home. And I want to know what your favorite movie is. And if you want to talk a little bit about how the business sucks or how the business is great, or yeah, we can talk about it. Totally. We can talk about it. But if that's the only thing you want to talk about, you're going to lose me pretty quickly.
My favorite gauge is when I could tell this person, I love doing this so much. If I'm at a party and they're doing the thing where they're drinking and they're totally looking above my head, or they're looking
to see who's behind you,
to see who's behind me, I'll whip out my past life story just to see what they do. If they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? They're like, oh wait, I want to know more about that. And they like drop the, you know, the veneer. It's so interesting because we are all This is, and the frustrating thing about this is that everyone would probably agree with me, but not everyone acts like this. We are all human beings first.
Yeah.
And we are so much more than the industry. We are so much more than how high we can belt. And I don't know when we're going to stop pretending like those are the most important qualities to us. One of my things that I'm like, Gen Z is going to, yes, they're going to save the world in so many ways. And then other ways where I'm like, is the, I feel like for me, the unimportance of acting, in a piece.
You lost me. I'm gone. You're right. I couldn't agree with you more.
You know,
you're when your eyes glaze over and it's just singing and you're, I'm like, great, you're a singer.
Right. And everyone's like, you know, in the comments, right? Like, oh my God, fierce. They sound so amazing. That tone. I'm like, yeah, it's all beautiful.
Yeah, fierce.
But, and it is fierce, but I'm like, what's behind it? That is the best. Yeah. That's how we, that is what is. And you know, that's art, right? Is someone can be incredibly moved by it, but I'm like, and then that really irks me is that when there is a show that a bootleg or something that is posted where they are acting
for their lives.
And the comments are like, oh my God, what an amazing actor. They are such good actors. I'm like, that should be
the neutral,
the baseline.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. My whole thing is like, are you a storyteller? Cause that's like the way that I'm always asking is like, if you look, there are a lot of people who sing way better than I do, period.
Same.
Good night. That's real. Like I'm a great singer, but there are a lot of people sing that better than I do. But I think when it comes down to it, like my priority is never going to be like, I'm going to sound better than that person. This is just my experience. Other people have different experiences, but mine is like, I'm going to tell a story.
Yeah.
And I want to tell it this is the show I'm doing right now, the Scissorhands musical tribute. Mm-hmm. There are some voices in this show that would make you want to just like Madame Guillotine yourself. They're so incredible. They're beyond. They sound like in the best way. They sound so pitch perfect, so auto-tuned. The tone is so beautiful. The range is unbelievable. And I always say to them, I'm like, you guys, I don't do that. What you do is like, to me, it's unreal to me. It is spectacular to me. It is absolutely not what I do. And so I often say like what I'm doing in Scissorhands is I'm doing like a play within a 90-minute musical tribute because yeah, I'm singing a lot, but if I have scissors on my hands and I'm telling this story about this outsider who wants to be included, my priority, while yes, of course I want to sound good and I want all the Gen Zers to say that I'm fierce, I also need to honor the integrity of this character and this person and this, I don't know why I always call Scissorhands a gay robot, but it feels right to me. This gay robot whose story needs to be told. And that has to be the priority. If I sound fierce singing while I do it, great. But that can't be the priority. And I will say that the people in Scissorhands are also incredible storytellers. Mm-hmm. Like this is not actually a one or the other. Like Emma Hunton is a perfect example of someone whose voice sounds like when Emma sings, I'm like, what's up? Like Emma's voice is unbelievable, but Emma's stupid. Voice is fully supported by the storytelling. And if you ask her, she'll be like, yeah, I'm a singer first, but am I? Because the storytelling will always be the priority.
I love watching Emma's bootlegs as Elphaba because I'm like, that's an actor. That's an actor, right?
Yeah.
And that's so interesting. I'm reading Barbara Streisand's book right now. My husband and I are both watching Barbara, reading
listening.
Barbara's
book. Oh, yeah.
And we're listening to the audio.
Yeah.
And, you know, she always describes herself as an actor first. And when you watch the videos of her, it's obvious. It's obvious that she is. And the way that she, what's so interesting about the way that she talks about the industry is my philosophy on the industry as well. There's a great story that she says, and it's not, this is where I can get myself in trouble because I'm a little like, I don't necessarily think everyone should be doing this at all times, but I think we do have the power to be able to do it once in a while. And it is when she was being seen for Funny Girl and was on the, I believe she said it was the St. James stage. and she sang some songs and they had her back to read the sides. She said, she was like, I can't. Oh, I think it was Arthur. Can't remember who it was. Said, Barbara, that's great, but can you please, can you cry doing this? We would like to see you cry doing this.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm sorry, I can't cry saying these words. And then the playwright, the book writer for Funny Girl, names, I wasn't expecting to tell this story, so names.
It's okay. Were, we'll put them in the comments.
Yeah, exactly. She said she stood up from the house and says, you're right, Barbara, they're not good enough.
Ooh.
And I was like, that is collaboration. And that is,
yeah. It's also not reality. It's not where we live in our day to day.
Yeah.
We don't live there in our day to day, but if you have an experience and you have a relationship with someone and you can collaborate like that, it's so special.
It's so special. And I'm asking artists to be more like that, to take their ego out and say, hey, yeah, this actually isn't good enough and I needed to hear that. And also the artist to be like, what is my intention? What is my motivation?
Oh,
why
yeah.
am I saying these words? As opposed to just being like, wow, I sound really good, you know?
Yeah, because also you can sound really good and I will listen to the cast album.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you jumped the gun a little bit.
I didn't mean to.
No. I'm glad you did, because we love a
segue.
A smooth, a segue. Don't you?
A segue.
Can't you write us a segue? Mm-hmm. And you're currently in a show, and that is Scissor Hands, a musical tribute.
Yep.
And
that's right.
How. Like, tell us about it. Like,
it's so delightful.
You were just extended till January 14th.
Till January 14th. This is sort of like the little show that could.
Yeah.
In 2018, one of my very best friends and brilliant mind and like unbelievable honey bunny with incredible vision, Bradley Bredewig, was like, do you want to come out? I was living in New York. I live in New York. And was like, do you want to come out to LA and do this musical version of Edward Scissorhands? And I was like, more than anything in the world, because I have been obsessed with that movie since I was a child.
So good.
When I ride the subway, I have this photo of myself from before he asked me where I'm riding the subway in a dark lip. And I look like Scissorhands on the train, just in my normal clothes. So I came out in 2018 to do the show. And we sort of put it together in a couple weeks. And it was this like sweet, Christmassy, a little bit queer, kind of figuring itself out show that was supposed to run for a month. We ran until the middle of March. Like, we were doing Christmas songs, and the day we closed, it was St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, it was unbelievable. So then 6 months later, Halloween, Christmas comes around. I mean, Christmas, like, not Halloween, but, like, you know, November comes around, December comes around. We do the show again. Then we lived through the pandemic. And it's just sort of had this life, this beautiful life, where the adaptation of the show is now even more than ever very queer. It's very much about anyone who has ever felt like on the outside, any version of that. So no matter who you are, if you've ever felt on the outside, I think that's what the movie always did. But now particularly this version is so based in its queerness, which is really, for me, a delight. And it's just had this kind of beautiful life of its own. These like amazing fans that have continued to come back, and they're bringing people, and it feels like Christmas. When we do Scissorhands, it feels like Christmas time.
And that's sort of I think this harkens back to what we were talking about before about checking off boxes and having experiences that are worth doing what we do, that aren't just Broadway, right?
Yeah.
Having experiences that you could do with your friends, and because it seems like you know Emma, Ryan, Dion ahead of time as well.
Emma, Ryan, and Dion I've known for a long time. Alex Ellis, who just joined the cast, we've never worked together before this, but I've known her for a long time. Carson Higgins, who just joined the cast, I've known for a long time. Who just joined the cast, but even before that, in 2018, Emma and Ryan and Dion, I'd been friends with them for ages, and Bradley too. And so it felt like, well, what if we just did this sweet little Christmas music? And now it has turned into something that is so far beyond what our wildest dreams could have imagined.
You never know when something that is meant to just feed your soul is going to become something much bigger. That's going to pay your rent, pay the bills. Yeah.
And it's a special show. Like the new version of the show is 90 minutes, which honestly is my favorite thing about a show these days.
Yeah.
Which is hard because I was always like a two actor. I was like, let me have a big show.
Yeah.
But I think now earning act two is really important. And if you can tell the story in 90 minutes, you should.
Yeah, Come From Away did that so beautifully. Whenever I talk about perfect theater, I always say Come From Away. I think it's one of the best things to ever happen. 90 minutes, turning something in history incredibly horrible and terrible, and turning that into something positive and joyful.
Yeah.
And I just feel, you know, Titanic is another one of those shows that I feel. Strange Loop was another one of those shows.
For me, Strange Loop, I was like, oh, we did it. Okay, we did it. I'm out.
Like, yeah.
Just storytelling maximized and no bits. Just.
And also tearing apart about what commercial theater can actually be. Because I think we're so used to commercial theater looking a certain way, but Strange Loop tore that apart in a lot of different ways. You know, there was the whole
a lot of different ways.
There was the whole going to hell.
The whole show, just like every moment I was like, got, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it was brilliant sitting in that uncomfortability, sitting in that what is gonna happen next? What is this looking like? What does this mean for theater? And that's some of my favorite theater is when we transform that. But I unfortunately I'm not gonna be able to see Scissorhands. I would love to because I'm gonna be on the East Coast, but what do you think audience members take away from the experience after they see it?
I think it's twofold. I think there is like merriment and Christmas and delight and like incredible singing and that side of it. And I think there's also like heartbreak and leaving with this sense of like, maybe I should just like be nicer to myself and love myself and be gentle on myself. And each other. What if we were just gentler with each other? Like the show has these moments that are so funny and these moments that are so deeply heartbreaking. And I think the balance of that creates, you know, something worth taking with you.
I love that. I think we all need to be kinder to each other. It's interesting living in a day and age where people don't want to be kind to each other, you know, with everything happening in the world. With everything happening in the world, I made a post that was just like, everyone needs to be kinder to each other when discussing what's happening.
Yeah.
And people came for me.
Well, yeah, of course they did.
And
that's what people
like,
do.
Wow.
The other thing is like,
wow.
And this is not about what you said, but I just like wonder if in general, like, what if we listened more?
Yes.
Like, I like to say, like, do a shush. Just do a shush. Do a shush, shush, shush. Do a shush. And listen more. What will happen? And what if you just like, I don't know.
It's such an interesting balance of that as a podcast host, too, because.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because it's like I have to guide a conversation in a certain way, and find the meat and potatoes of that story, but also allow you to fully take a stand and listen to the things, you know, develop questions that are based on the things that you've said, because you know there's more story there, and we could go, you know, it's so much more than just like a. You know, where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. But like, how do you feel? Why did you do that?
Yeah.
Why did you experience this? What happened then? And I think that's the sort of magic about being a host and podcast host is experiencing the why behind everything.
Sure.
And that sort of.
And I wonder, like, with the way that it just started pouring rain in Los Angeles, like you would not believe. A Christmas miracle, maybe. I've never seen it rain like this in LA. This is the last time I saw it rain like this in LA. I saw there was a lightning that hit a telephone pole and I saw it go up in flames. And that was like 10 years ago.
That's
wow,
wild.
This is wild. Yeah, I mean, why? And also, like, why are we coming for each other? Why are we, there's stuff to fight about. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like so passive. I don't believe in any of that. I just wonder if like we could just be like cool, man.
I would
Just
love to
be
be.
cool, man.
I would love to be cool, man. I think that would be amazing. And I think if you can in LA, head to see Scissorhands. Tickets
Please
are,
come see us.
please, they extended till January 14th.
We have so many shows.
Yes, tickets are sold exclusively online by Fever, and there's general admission tickets. There's also VIP reserve seating. The show is a fabulous 90 minutes, and this is recommended for 13, for ages 13 and up. And
Unless you're a 13-year-old, unless you have like a young person like us. Like if you have a creepy kid at home, bring them.
okay, right,
Like
you
if
heard.
you, or if you have like a queer kid at home that needs some love, bring your queer kid.
Bring the queer kids, bring them,
Please bring
and
your
it's
queer kids.
at the Bourbon Room, which is on Hollywood Boulevard in LA. And follow Scissorhands Musical at Scissorhands Musical on social media, and use the hashtag Scissorhands the Musical. And Jordan, where can we follow you on social media?
You can follow me at JKAIB, 5 letters.
JKAIB.
AIB, Jake IB. That's it. That's me. It says Donut Troll. You'll know it's me. It says Donut Troll, Magic Mike, sometimes Gilda Radner, and Scissorhands. And then it has like a lot of emojis of stuff I like to eat, and also dogs.
If I could steal anyone's bio, I think it would be yours.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Often Gilda Radner, Magic Mike, Scissorhands, and Romy Michelle.
You're amazing, Jordan. Thank you so much for this great
Ah! This was
conversation.
so fun. You're a delight. Thank you so much for having me. Come see Scissorhands, please.
We absolutely will. Thank you.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.